This is Rabbi Josh Uter, and on this week's What's the Point of the Midrash, Aaron London joins in to discuss aging and expectations. And welcome. I have with me today, all the way from Australia, Aaron London, who has been serving as the scholar in residence at the ACT Jewish Community in Canberra, Australia, also in her final year at Maharat. Thank you very much for getting up early for this. It's morning by you, evening by me. So welcome.
Thanks for having me. Good evening.
Good. Well, yeah, all relative. Also, we have no idea who's listening to this when. So anyway, let's get right to it. A couple of Midrashim dealing with age, specifically based off of Bereishit 24:1, Va'avram zaken ba bayamim, and Abraham was now very old. So we have a couple of Midrashim here. We'll be reading, first one is going to be from Bereishit Rabbah 59:1, and we'll go into 59:3, but they're thematically almost identical. So first 59:1, it is written, the hoary head is a crown of glory. It is found in the way of the righteousness. This is a citing from Mishlei chapter 16, verse 31. Rav Meir once went to Mamla. Seeing that the people there were all black-haired, he asked them, from what family are you? Perhaps from Eli, of whom it is written, and all the increase of thy house shall die young men. Master, pray for us, they beseeched him. Go and engage in righteousness, and you will attain to old age. He told them, what is the proof? The hoary head is a crown of glory, as it is found in the way of the righteousness. From whom do you learn it? From Abraham, because it is written of him to do righteousness. He attained old age, and Abraham was old. Rav Acha, this is now in 59:3, commenced his discourse thus, even unto old age and hoary heirs, O God, forsake me not. This is citing Tehillim 71:18. Said Rav Acha, are not old age and hoary heirs identical? But the meaning is, if thou hast granted me old age, grant me hoary heirs. And from whom do you learn this? From Abraham. For it is written of him, that they may keep the way of the Lord. He attained old age, and Abraham was old. So, one at a time with these. Yav Rav Meir goes to a place, and he sees that they're all young. Seems that there's a problem with that. And he says, huh, maybe you're descendants of Eli, who, you know, they said, well, you're all going to die young. So they said, oh, pray for us. He says, go engage in righteousness, and you'll become old, which will be defined by having gray hair. What does that speak to you?
So, to me, it's actually two things now that we're talking about it. One, potentially the importance of intergenerational community, mm-hmm. that it's not good to just be a group of young people. Whether or not, I don't know, maybe they are descendants of Eli, and then that is also bad that they're going to die young and there aren't any old people. Mm. Or I think that can also be read of, we're not meant to kick our old people out of our communities. We're not meant to only be a group of young people, and so we should be trying to do whatever we can to bridge that. Intergenerational work is something that's very close to my heart of running intergenerational theater programs. In Israel, I ran a minyan that met in the nursing home I worked in, and how much both the younger people who came from the outside and the residents who lived in the home actually got so much from interacting with each other. Because there is something a little bit isolating that you don't get to experience as much on both ends. And there's actually a lot to learn from everyone. You know, having funny conversations about, you know, letting the older adults know about YouTube and being like, okay, name me a song, any song you want. And then them being in shock of seeing, you know, Enrico Macias from 1950 on stage, and they're like, "Whoa, does everyone your age know how to use these machines?" And but also the amazement of finding a song that a 102-year-old man is thinking about and trying to sing, and normally being slumped over. And because I can find YouTube on my phone, by chance I found this song, and all of a sudden he's sitting upright and starts singing at the top of his lungs, which shocked his daughter and everyone standing around him.
Wow.
Where if we didn't have the interactions with younger people, they wouldn't have that. And at the same time of just listening to what they have accomplished, how they accomplished, because you don't stop being yourself. The other thought that I have with these two is the opposite of what I think that today we think about, of how everyone doesn't want, gray hair, or at least most women are trying to dye their hair or change their hair, and we have anti-aging products, and we don't want to be getting older. We like youth. And so it's very interesting of what would happen in our society if instead we actually pushed in this idea, not only are we supposed to honor older people, so like getting up in chairs, but also like desiring to get older, thinking that there's something actually positive with that, not that they're feeble or need extra help, but actually something to try and get to.
Yeah, a few interesting points with that. Have you ever seen the movie Logan's Run?
No.
No. Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. It just as you were talking, the way that you read that midrash reminded me of Logan's Run. The plot, it was a novel first, and basic plot was there's a community in some post-apocalyptic time where everyone there is young, and you actually, quote, renew when you hit, what was the age, 25 or so? So, like, no one really got older, and renewing was actually like, whatever, find it online. But in a way, it was like of preventing age. And so, you seem to have read, the story with Rav Meir and Mamla was, almost like isolating the elderly people. And as you were talking, it kind of like hit me that, it doesn't say why there weren't any old people. But like you would think that they would realize, like, hey, you notice no one here lives past a certain age, and like we all keep dying young, right? It's not like we're expelling the old people. It's that, I wouldn't even know how they would realize it. Like they would never see any old people and just assume, well, sure, it might be normal to die at the age of, I don't know, 28 or something like that. And it just never it never occurred to them until someone pointed out, it's like, hey, there are no old people here. And so for that, you can almost say, all right, living longer is better, right? Because most people want to live longer. But the second part with Rav Acha, something very interesting that you hit on that today, we don't like giving the impression of looking older. But here it's described in Mishlei as an a teret tiferet. It's actually considered, a crown. And connected to righteousness, I guess, connecting to, well, if you live a long life, you must be righteous, even though, that's not necessarily, a corollary, but just even to have that sign, that visible, the visible sign in your head that, hey, you're old. There must be something either good about you, either, be it righteousness or maybe something more intrinsic.
Yeah, I think very much so. And like that also reminds me of something in Kiddushin of Rav Yossi Aglili said the word zaken can only mean one who acquired wisdom. As it says, Hashem acquired me, i.e. wisdom, on the outset of his journey from Proverbs, Mishlei 8:22. So
Right.
like there is this idea of zaken and wisdom and knowing whether that's knowing things because they experience things already, or knowing things because they're actually geniuses.
Right, and then you have Rav Elazar ben Azaria with that whole,
Right.
Harinei kivein shivim shana, the story there about, he's all 17 and then like woke up the next day and he looked like he was 70. Was he smarter? No, but he looked the part.
Right. Well, there's something real about that as someone
No.
who doesn't look my age all the time. I look most of the time younger. Most people assume I'm younger than I am.
Oh, yeah.
And like, what does it mean to be an authority when you're young? And like,
That's why
are
I
people
kept.
going to trust me?
You should know
What?
that's why I kept the beard. My first year at Stanton Street, for, I grew out a sphere of beard. And it's like, okay, like now I actually look a little bit older. Without it, when I was at University of Chicago in like, grad school, like, years on, I forget how old I was, at the time, but I got confused for being an undergrad. Without it, like, yeah, look really, really young. It's like, okay, I'll grow the beard. Does it, I don't know. Maybe it
Yeah,
worked.
there's a reality to that. And I think also of like sometimes understanding age, like feeling older is something, I think it's also like internal. I remember in when I was an undergraduate student, I ran an intergenerational theater company. And there was a man that was part of our group who was 101, which
Wow.
meant that he was 80 years older than me. And I was just firstly like, what does that even mean that someone's 80 years older than me? That's a crazy amount of time. But it was something that I remember through my research of because I was doing qualitative research, so you ask personal questions of what does it mean to tell people who are 50, 60, 70, 80 years older than me that they didn't do something right or that they weren't on time. Or that I need them to do something else of like taking that control, especially in a world where, showing respect to old elders or they have wisdom or and so there is something also of like feeling old enough to do that.
I had.
Especially I don't know, my field is older adults, and so I'm constantly working with people who are my grandparents' age,
Yeah, I
but
know
telling
you.
them what to do and how to do it and
I know what you mean by that. Excuse me. I once had an interview at a place. I was actually in England, and there was an older woman, must have been her 70s, 80s, just had difficulty calling me rabbi, because like rabbi is supposed to be this, big great thing, and I was like my mid-20s at the point, and like she has like I just can't do it, and I'm like, understood, because like I've been called worse, but like, I mean, yeah, what, like I'm now going to start, and also my approach to the rabbi, it was different, but from her, perspective, well, the rabbi is going to start coming in, is going to start preaching all of these things about meaning of life and stuff when, she's got, not 80, but like, let's say 50 years on me. Like, yeah, I don't, I mean, I didn't do it then, but she had no idea. And I can understand that, when you've lived, a lifetime more than someone else, you could resent what other people start telling you, here's how the world really works. Because it really isn't, a sense of experience. And, it's interesting here, though, that, there's, at least based on these couple of Midrashim, that there still is something significant to the superficial, right? So even though for you mentioned, it's like, yeah, there's supposed to be righteousness attached, but here, like, it's almost, the perk is still good. Because maybe, I don't know the details of the society for how back then of how well the elderly were actually treated. I would suppose in some cases, the elderly were treated, with the modicum of respect. I don't, I mean, you have like a couple of statements, but you don't really know how everyone was. Today, it almost kind of depends, because we, in some cases, like, oh, actually, you've seen it more. So, what have you seen, from your experience of how, seniors can be treated, like the range of possibilities?
I mean, everything from treating them to like people to the opposite of that, which is very negative.
Right.
Of
Well, very
I think
diplomatic.
sometimes that's like one of the hardest parts of working with older adults. You have older adults who are in their late 90s and running around. Like this 101-year-old man that I worked with, I guess, 11 years ago. So he stopped coming to the theater group. And everyone in the group was really worried. He's 101. I think he was closer to 102 at that point. Maybe he passed away, which is like, it's very sad, but okay, he's 102. And one day I bump into him in the hallway. And so I go, Carl, everyone misses you. Where are you? Why aren't you in theater group? He's like, oh, I don't like the time that you chose. I'd rather play pool with my friend Willis. And I'm like, okay, what am I supposed to say to you?
Yeah.
right? So you do have older adults that are able to run around, do what they want when they want to. On the other hand, there's a lot of difficulties that also come with age. And some, very hard things, both for the person and for their families, dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, stroke. There's a lot of aging diseases, I guess, would be the best way to put that. And I think that it's very one of the most difficult things to see figure out, like with my job, was how to do programming that is at a high level with regards to respect, but at a low level so that the residents were able to participate. And because we were working on certain things like fine motor skills or, talking about the winter and like what are winter fruits. So like playing memory games that might seem a little bit childish. So how do we take these like games that are very good for them, to make their minds work, make their fingers work, continue whatever they're capable of, but have it be at a level that they don't feel like they're back in kindergarten or doing children's programming or things like that. And I think that's probably the most difficult because it is really easy to just like assume that they're like children, they're talking like children, they're not necessarily capable of speaking in the same way that they used to. And I think it's really just important to remember of who they are and what they're capable of. Rather than what they're not capable of.
Yeah. I mean, the Midrashim here seem to be all about positive signs with aging. I mean, they view old age as something, as a reward. They view the signs of old age as, something to kind of aspire to. Yeah, and it's kind of interesting that they don't mention any of the negativity behind it. I mean, I don't know.
There are Midrashim that do. There are midrashim on Kohelet. There are midrashim on, also on this pasuk, which is a little bit from Tanhuma that talks a little bit of more of the negative sides of aging. Also, there are areas in the Gemara itself. We'll also talk. I don't have those sources open in front of me, but there are actually a number that talk about the degrees of the body starting to fail that you're not going to hear anymore and you're not able to chew and going into and you can't see and that you're just waiting
Yeah,
basically.
and it's interesting that none of them matters here. And it's always interesting when you look at these, Midrashim, do you assume that they have all of the other stuff in mind at the same time? Or are they just trying to get like one specific point out? And if you like look at it all together, it could almost be like, well, this is a mitigating factor that, despite all of that, here are some good things that can come out of old age, that it's not necessarily something to dread, but something to look forward to, because even if it might be painful, there's something intrinsically valuable, if not to yourself, but to society for, just being there and, I guess, projecting the wisdom that comes along with it.
Or there's different sides to aging, right? That, aging is not, it's not like one day you're old and that's it. It's a process. And like, so there might be a point in time that it's just this, that you just have gray hair and there is something nice to that. And then maybe as, you go out, like, right? It's from like Pirkei Avot where they talk about, what is it? Like the, each age is a different thing. You know what I'm talking about? And it's like one of them, it's like the one of the last ones, it's just like you're dead even though you're alive. So I think there's that. Or there's also just
Look that up.
people age differently. Not everyone ages the same way. And so some people, it's going to be a like beautiful time of respect and honor and just resting. And for other people, it's not necessarily going to be that way.
Yeah, incidentally, you're referring to Avot 5:21. Chuppah ben All right. L'chuppah ben esrim, l'irdof ben shloshim. Like, so get married at 20. The thing you were talking about was all the way at the end. Ben shmonim l'gvura. Right. So 80 was strength. Ben tishim l'shua. One second. Sorry. Lost it up here. Apologize for that. Technical difficulties. 521. Well, I was also looking for one of the things I was also looking for was whatchamacallit. Al tashlicheni le'et zikna kechlot kochenu al ta'azvenu. Of, yeah, you know, a source about whatchamacallit. Old age being something just gets sent into without losing full faculties. Okay, apologize for that. I had only loaded up half of the Midrash. Mishnah, I'm sorry. So 521, I'll just read the quick translation I have here. Used to say 5 years is the age for study of Scripture, 10 for Mishnah, 13 for keeping commandments, 15 for Talmud, 18 for getting married, 20 for pursuit, 30 for full strength, 40 for understanding, 50 for giving counsel, 60 is a mature age, 70 is for a hoary head. So if you want to live for those gray hairs, you have to be at least 70. 80 is for super strength. 90 is for bending over. 100 is, as you put it, as if dead, passed away, ceased from the world. Ki'ilu meit ve'avar ubatel min ha'olam. Which I'm assuming you did not quote to the guy who was playing pool.
No, I did not.
And
I found the quote from Kohelet, which is Kohelet 12:3. On the day that the keepers of the house tremble and the mighty men are seized by cramps and the grinders cease, since they have become few and those who look out of the windows become darkened.
Yeah.
You know.
All right. Well, so at least there's some balance here, I suppose.
Right. Yeah. Oh, and it's the Gemara in Shabbos, Kufnun Bet. Mm-hmm. So 152a.
Awesome.
Is where it talks about it.
Yeah. And well, also, like, you would think, like, in context, you know, the fact that the Gemara, that the Torah would say, Avram Zakein Bayamim, right? In Avram's case, you like to think, well, you know, hey, this is actually, you know, a good thing for him. And, you know, a whole bunch of other stuff happens to him while he's in this old stage. All right. Okay. Let's move on to the next one. This is Breishit Rabbah 59:4. So here's an interesting story where Rav Shmuel Bar Isaac commenced, "He that follow after righteousness and mercy find life, prosperity, and honor," citing Mishlei 21:21. When Rav Shmuel Bar Isaac died, the man who used to dance on three branches before bridal couples came forth as three branches before bridal couples. There came forth winds and hurricanes and uprooted all of the trees of Israel. Why so? Because he used to take branches from them and go before the bride. The rabbis used to complain, "Why does he act thus, bringing contempt upon the Torah?" But Rav Zeira had answered them, "Leave him alone, for he knows what he's doing." Hence, when he died, they went forth to pay their respects. A tongue of flame descended, assumed the shape of a myrtle branch, and interposed between his bier and the people. Said they, "See how those branches now stand, that old man in good stead." Now, I happen to like this midrash for a bunch of reasons. Like, one, they mentioned before we started recording that it reminded me of the story about David HaMelech, when he went out and danced before the Torah, and held issue with Michal Bat Shaul, who, you know, gave him some flack for it, and he defended himself. And, you know, here, I mean, at the mention here is like there's something about, you know, of, you know, age, about, you know, something beneath your dignity. But what was he doing? He was doing a mitzvah. He was trying to make someone happy, and he was actually being emotive. And sometimes from our leaders, you know, people we hold in, you know, dignified, to expect, you know, a certain detachment. And here, you know, he just wasn't. He just went for it. People complained about it. And then you needed Rav Zera to sort of step in and say, yada ma, dehu yada mahu avid. He knows what he's doing, right? So it's almost like you respect the person as a leader up to a point. till they start doing something you see unbecoming, and then you have to be reminded, if this person does in fact have the qualities of being such a great leader, benefit of the doubt at least. What do you
Right.
think? Because
Or I think,
you're actually a
yeah.
performer. And I'm trying to in addition to having experience with the dealing with senior citizens, you're actually a performer, right? Which I would assume requires, what? You are, no?
I mean, I guess in theory, but I do more directing or
Ah.
have done more directing in the past. But yeah, so I make other people do things.
Oh, okay. What you just like a rabbi should. Yes. Like everyone else, what you really want to do is direct. So what do you think about this?
So it's interesting because I didn't think about this so much before, but as you were talking, I was thinking about it. So not only I think for our leaders, but going back to aging, and maybe it's just because my head is in aging world right now. We have these expectations of like what an old person does, right? And but what happens if they don't want to do that? Like, what if they want to go dancing and wear bright colored clothing and, do go skydiving? I don't know. Right? Besides for health reasons, okay? It's like things that are not detrimental to their health and well-being. There is this like stereotype of what does an old person do, and then what do we do when they don't want to do that? And how accepting are we of that? Which is not only for our leaders, which I agree with you that, we want our leaders in some ways to be certain way, and then if they don't, there are some who can pull it off. I feel like, Shimon Peres was really good at that, like when he made the video 2 years ago. But like him skydiving and being a pizza man, like he was someone who we accepted both as a leader and as an older person that was able to do whatever he wanted. But I feel like for the majority of people, we have very high expectations, or ideas of how those people are supposed to look or do. And if they veer from that, maybe we're going to lose respect, which I think is problematic of why not? Like, do what you need to be doing and you want to be doing if it's not detrimental to your health and well-being or others' health and well-being, all within reason.
Yeah, the Paris commercials is a really great example. I mean, one, he was, really beloved by many in the country, which helps because you're predisposed to view it favorably. And it came across as he was, almost making fun of himself, in a way, it's not just a normal senior citizen. There's just, kind of the, you have this very big public figure who can also be self-deprecating in a way that's very sincere. I mean, this was after, he wasn't running for office anymore, so it's not like, oh, I'm going to pull some stunt so I can curry favor. The sincerity behind it was just, was very noticeable. And just from my own experience, I found that sincerity mattered more than anything else. In the rabbinate, certain people have certain personalities, right? I suppose it's easier to stifle, a very outgoing personality and just, keep your mouth shut, smile and nod for a bit than it is for someone who might be less outgoing to try to pretend to be like the party type person, right? So, here with, Shmuel Bar Isaac, could also be like, what's this? It might have been, they don't actually say, why exactly is he being a, they put it, Lama hu mevaze oraita, right? It's a language in the Hebrew. Like, why is he embarrassing the Torah? But, how could that be embarrassing? Is it, David, of the fact that you're dancing? Could it be that they felt he was trying to put on a show? Who knows? But, maybe, they couldn't tell the difference, right? But Rav Zeir's like, trust, could also just as be as like he is who he is, like let it go, right? Because he knows what he's doing, and the fact,
Right.
that when,
When
and
we were
also that
talking
when
about
he
it
died,
earlier, what?
and the fact that like when he died, the story about how you will see like a the a flame descend and assume the shape that not only was it important, but his entire life is almost reduced to this. Like, you know what? It was this moment, right? You know, that this thing that he, you know, reminding you of this thing that you critiqued, you know, really almost encapsulated his entire life, which, you know, I don't know if, you know, Rav Shmuel Bar Isaac would have appreciated that. Like, he might have done more, you know, other things in his life, right, to be remembered for. But, like, it's also, it's not just, you know, it's not just here's what I did, but here's how I did, and this is now how you're going to be remembered.
Right. I mean, I think it's also, you know, going back, like, how does one, like, worship God? I guess, and I think about, you know, the story that's either the boy who can't daven and he either whistles or plays his flute in shul or sings the Aleph Bet, and, you know, whichever version of that story you want, and, like, that's, the rabbi says, you know, let him do, like, that's how he's talking to God. And so this is also, you know, he's not just randomly dancing in the streets. Shmuel Bar Isaac, right? He's not, you know, putting on a show for the sake of putting on a show. He's dancing before the bridal couple. And we're taught that that's one of the greatest mitzvahs, you know? We need to make the bridal couple happy. And this is what he's doing. He's using his skills and maybe his love of dance, you know? Maybe he doesn't get much use of that as a rabbi. He doesn't get the chance to dance, but here he does. And he might be a very talented dancer, and which sounds like it. I don't know. I can't imagine dancing on tree branches. Like,
that's... Yeah, I don't quite know how that works, but I have absolutely no dancing skills. So I'm sure
it sounds like acrobatics to me. Like thinking about like tightrope walkers and being able to jump from branch to branch. That's what's in my head.
Huh.
Right? And so like he's doing such an amazing mitzvah and using his body and his talents for that mitzvah. Which I think also shoots to a whole nother idea of, which I'm very strong with, of like looking at each of us as individuals, looking at what are our talents, what are things that we love doing, and how can we take those talents and our loves and somehow bring them into our lives within the world of mitzvah and honoring and serving God.
Mm-hmm.
And how different we could actually interact of like, okay, so I love to dance, but what can I do with dance? And that might mean that I'm going to dance before bridal couples. Maybe I'm going to start a dance company for people who one might assume can't dance because of physical limitations. You know, using all those things. And that seems to be very much what Reb Shmuel Bar Isaac is doing. And then Rabbi Zera is saying, you know what? He knows what he's doing. He's honoring God. Like, let's watch this. And it seems so much clearer of that's why the branches were there after he died, that they're like, no, like, this was honor.
Yeah, and you would think, like, you know, being mesameach et tan v'kala, you know, is, you know, being mahalik kadam kala, like, doing things for, you know, the sake of a bride is, I mean... presumably the rabbis know that, like, you know, this is actually kind of a mitzvah and kind of a good thing, as you put it, not doing it in the street. I mean, had he done that too, all right, maybe you would have had a case. Maybe. But, like, yeah, you would think, like, they would, could recognize, like, you know, yes, this is for a mitzvah. Though even so, like, one of my... there's a Gemara I like to quote in Sukkah about Tziniut. On Hatznei Lechet Im Elohecha, where the Gemara there says, you know, just as you're supposed to be act with tzniut for public mitzvot, like weddings and funerals, if I'm remembering right, should also kal v'chomer be tzniua in the mitzvot that are supposed to be private. Which, and the reason why I love that Gemara is, you know, when I said in the shiur that I gave on that was, you know, anyone then who does public protests about tzniut is ironically violating the Gemara's definition of tziniut, right? So it could also be, like they said, well, yes, you can, you know, go ahead and do it, but also what's considered tziniua? Like, what would be considered as, you know, sure, you can be emotive, but is there a line or is there too much, right? So it could just be like, no, we're okay with it, but, like, you know, keep things steady. Like the Gemara and Brachot about breaking the glass at the wedding when, you know, people thought they were just too happy and it went with, you know, against their equanimity. And yeah, I mean, there's also the issue of just judgment. Like, do you trust your colleagues? When do you trust your colleagues' judgment, and when do you step in? Because I don't know, everyone makes mistakes. Everyone has their own blind spots, and you have to know someone pretty well in order to say, like, person knows what he's doing, let it go. Versus, like, no, we actually do need to intervene be out of not because, like, we're necessarily embarrassed, which could have been here, but like. You'd probably be just like, this is something you don't want to do, and maybe you just, maybe you've just lost a sense of perspective. See, that's why,
Right.
like,
Or sometimes, I mean, we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording and this reminded me of a story at the nursing home of sometimes we don't fully understand things from the other person's perspective. So the story I was telling you before was of there was a man that I used to help put on his tefillin, and he wanted to put tefillin on. He couldn't do it himself. He was post-stroke, so he didn't have use of his left side. So I would wrap for him, and then he would daven. And this is a man who was a Holocaust survivor. He told me the reason why tefillin was so important for him is that when he was a child, so 13, his father used to wake him up before school to put tefillin on, and then when he couldn't go to school anymore, and he was going to work, then before work, putting tefillin on. And when he was in the camps, so he was in Bergen-Belsen for a bit. He was actually putting on tefillin in between the beds during that time, and now that he's out, he wanted to be able to do that mitzvah as much as he could. But I wouldn't get to work until around 3, and I was putting on his tefillin, and I noticed he was davening shacharit. And one day I mentioned to him, I was like, you can put tefillin on and daven mincha, and his answer to me was, it's not Tisha B'Av. I can't do that. And it's, this very interesting thing of, and I think this goes into, halacha and like how do we decide halacha and what are we talking about? Like actually sitting and listening to the person of what is their physical and emotional experience of what they're doing. Of he wants to put tefillin on, it makes sense. There's no one there that could do it except for me. I don't get there until then. But this idea of like, no, I'm not gonna like do Tisha B'Av every day of the week, like that's crazy. And I would never have known that if I didn't sit and ask him. And so it might look, we never really know what's going on. And so thank God, for Rosh Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, what was he doing? And maybe Rabbi Zero had more insight into his colleague or friend of greater meaning or understanding of the dancing on the trees.
Very cool. Well, thank you. That's about all the time we have for tonight. And thank you very much for joining. You're still in Australia. You're heading back to New York soon, so right? So
Yeah,
best of
I fly on Sunday.
Wow. So I know it's a very busy time for you. You've got a whole bunch of other things to take care of. So thank you very much for joining.
Thank you for having me. Have a wonderful time,
Thank
day,
you.
whatever.
Yes, and thank you. Be well.